Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the picture, what I've left behind. You want again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know what you have done.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the NASCA Stop Child Abuse Now show. We are excited to have you here this evening. We are on scan number 2978. And we would love to have you join us this evening if you'd like to call in and on the guest line and be part of the panel and ask our guest questions. We're excited to introduce him here in a minute, but the guest call-in number is 646-595-2118, and we'd love to have you. And one of my co-hosts will reach on the back line and let you in. So this evening, we just are going to have a very special guest, as all of our guests are, actually. His name is Billy Joe Payne. He's from Texas. And before I tell you any more about him, I am going to tell you a little bit about NASCA. And here at NASCA, we have a single purpose, and that is to address issues that are related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect, and we do so with only two goals. One, by educating the public, especially as it's related to helping society get over its taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse, CSA, and presenting facts showing child abuse to be a pandemic worldwide problem that affects everybody. And two, by offering hope and healing through numerous paths, providing many services adult survivors of child abuse, and information for anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. And you can find some of that information that I just talked about on NASCA.org, and that is NASCA.org. And that stands for, in case you're new, the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse. So again, NASCA.org, and you can also listen to the show online as well if that's something that you want to do. So this evening, Dr. Dancy is with us. Hello, Dr. Dancy, are you there?
Hi, good evening, everyone. Yes, I'm here. Such a pleasure to be on tonight. Can't wait to meet Mr. Billy and hear his story. Sounds like it's going to be a wonderful testimony.
Yeah. It's not only a personal connection to what he does, but he also is an expert in human trafficking, and he has written some curriculum as well, as a co-founder of PBJ Learning, and then also, which I guess is an online learning platform, and then also a co-founder of a nonprofit called Radical Empathy Education Foundation. And he developed an in-person curriculum for that as well. So he's going to talk this evening about, you know, human trafficking and, you know, talking about how that's just modern-day slavery, which is violating labor trafficking and sex trafficking. He talks about how it generally involves the use of force, fraud, or coercion to obtain some type of labor or commercial sex act. The exception, he says, is if a child is under 18 years of age and trading sex for any value. That is automatically human trafficking. Billy Joe has spent several years, 30 years to be exact, in the interactive space creating award-winning games, simulations, educational programs, and gamified training products. It sounds like he's done a lot of stuff here. You know what? And I am going to let him explain all this. Mm-hmm. I'm getting tongue-tied trying to explain all this. So I'm going to go ahead and bring him on, and he can just tell us, you know, his story, how it is personal, and then how he got into these programs that he's developing. So welcome, Billy Joe. Are you there?
Yes, I am. Thank you so much for the great introduction. I'm really, really happy to be with you guys. Let's see. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Hello?
Yeah.
I'm on?
I hear you well.
Okay, great. Sorry. So I've been driving all day, and I stopped at a local restaurant here in Lockhart. So I'm just enjoying some local cuisine. And so I guess I'll start off by saying you're right. I've done a whole lot of stuff, and it's difficult to kind of catch up. So I've been making interactive games since 1992. I've done educational stuff for the military as well as after-school programs for underprivileged kids. And in 2013, I was working on a project for a friend of mine who I'd known for almost a decade. And I did not know this, but it turns out that he is an actual sex predator. And I found that out after I found out he was actually grooming my children. So he would call the house, and sometimes I would talk to him. Sometimes my wife would get a hold of him, or he'd get a hold of my wife first, and then she'd hand me the phone. And the same thing happened with the kids. He'd known the kids for years. So ultimately, he was found out that he was talking to the kids and telling them what porn sites they should be watching or looking at. He was telling my daughter how to, in a very detailed way, telling her how to clean her genitals. And then he was promising my kids to take him to some really expensive outings. And when we took him to the police, they told us that that was called grooming. And so we were like, okay, what is that? And they said, well, it's the, you know, it's promising people big things and then normalizing the discussion of sex and then ultimately potentially abusing your kids and all the way up into trafficking. So when the police told us that, that's when we went and confronted him, and he didn't seem to think this was a big problem. And so we tried to do something about him, but there wasn't anything that they could do because he didn't cross a line according to Texas law. So anyway, we started looking for resources to try to learn more about grooming and, you know, child abuse and trafficking and things that my kids or our kids could be looking out for. And we couldn't find any resources that really made any sense to us. So, it was really disappointing. We bought a few books and taught the kids what we could out of those things, but it was always in the back of my mind that somebody needed to do something. And after a while, I started working with virtual reality hardware, and I found out that VR kind of has a way to leave a lasting memory with you, and you get to have this really personal connection with what's in the device because you're blocking out the everything else in the world. You got a headset on, you got earphones on, and so you have, a straight relationship with the user. So there's been studies that show that VR can actually generate empathy and change people's personal behaviors. So I was like, okay, I'm going to go for this. So I figured I would make a virtual reality simulation to educate people what it was really like to be psychologically manipulated and tricked instead of what people generally see in the movies, which is like somebody being, you know, kidnapped and then drugged and things like that. I wanted to highlight the insidious nature of this happening in plain sight. And this story that I settled upon was about a young girl who meets a boy online. She's mentioning that she's having problems. And so this guy finds her and basically figures out all the things that she needs. And then he basically provides them for her. So she's not getting enough attention from her family. She doesn't have any real friends. And so basically he befriends her. basically starts turning her against her parents and tricking her into moving or to leaving the house and sneaking out with him. Eventually convinces her that he loves her, and then after that he turns her out and starts selling her for sex. So the experience is very, very, what would be the word I would use? It's super calm. It's not graphic. It's not exploitative in any way. What happens is you start the game and you see her. It's not really that much of a game, but it's more of an interactive experience. So you start the experience inside of her suburbs, and you're looking around, and you can see this is a normal suburb. You know, she talked and she's telling you about her life experience in the suburbs, where everything is safe, blah, blah, blah. Then you experience what it's like to live in her condo where she's being kept in between her, quote, dates, where obviously she goes and she's victimized and raped. But she's talking to you about her life and how her her captor basically has psychologically tricked her. So you see objects that are like you would consider to be like a regular object, like some makeup on a table or a cell phone, and it shows you those objects from her point of view. So you would think, and the girl's 14 in the experience, so a 14-year-old girl, you would think that if she looked at makeup, she would think, oh, okay, I should, you know, I would put that on to be pretty and make me fit. Well, she explains that she has to wear makeup to make herself look older or younger, depending on who it is that wants to rape her. And so, because, I mean, what this is a child, this is rape. This is not, you know, prostitution. This is raping children. So, so she has a completely different experience with makeup than we would. And so when you put somebody in that person's shoes and they're explaining it to you, it has a really lasting impact. Same thing goes for the cell phone. You know, you would look at a cell phone, you think, oh, okay, why doesn't she just call her parents? Well, she explains that this guy knows her parents. He knows her friends because he met her on social media. He's threatened to kill her relatives and her friends. So she won't call. And then she explains that she also has to use the cell phone so that she has it with her all the time. If her boyfriend slash pimp texts her, she has to do whatever he says. She has to use the phone to take pictures of herself, to advertise herself online, et cetera, et cetera. So the whole idea is to give somebody the point of view of the world from that person's perspective so you kind of understand the trauma bonding, all the pain and the frustration and the confusion that's happening in a young person's mind. So that's the top level view, but the point was that I wanted to make something that would give you that perspective because reading about it isn't really doing it. So like a completely interactive experience where you have agency to learn more and decide what you're interested in really does leave a lasting impression. And I could go on for hours, so I'll stop now and let you ask some questions. I'm sorry?
I was just going to say, that's how people are learning these days, though, is all on the Internet. I mean, it's all online. Everything is online.
Well, kids, that's true.
Or my grandkids aren't even being, they're not being taught how to write in cursive anymore because they just are on their computers all the time, all day at school.
No, they stopped that cursive writing long before computers. They stopped that cursive before this pandemic. That's been gone for a while, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's been done for a while, but my kids learned it. You know, when my kids were growing up, they learned cursive, so it's just a whole different.
Well, I mean, your brain works differently when you write in cursive. Your brain works differently than if you do print. You think of more of a concept than you think of the individual letters. So so when they got rid of that, it changed the way a lot of people think when they're actually writing. So it's a huge problem, but that, you know, I can't fix that one. But what you're saying is about people being online. Oh, I could talk about that if you want me to. I could go on and on about educational stuff. I have teaching it goes like four generations back in my family. So I've been hearing everything about teaching forever. So the risk that we have right now is that parents don't understand that when they give kids a cell phone or unrestricted access to the Internet, what they are doing is they are putting their children right in the middle of everyone, and that child is advertising essentially that they are completely unsupervised. I mean, it is having a kid online without them built there is an unsupervised minor. And they are vulnerable to anything. I mean, we're talking about texts, guilt, you know, people bullying them, making people take pictures of themselves to be used as exploitation, sexploitation, or coercion. I mean, you name it. There are too many people that have, like, a couple of nude pictures that are out there, and all of a sudden they're totally being abused by other people in their school. And so I guess my real point about this is that parents don't realize how risky it is to have their kids on the internet, period, much less having a smartphone in their pocket, much less letting them have a smartphone or the internet while they're not visible. So there's so much importance about that. And trafficking is, I mean, it's the bullseye to all bad things, in my opinion. And I know that, you know, with your organization, the numbers on trafficking victims when it comes to childhood sexual or child sexual abuse or child abuse are just staggering. The last study that I'd read said that, like, I think it was kind of something like 80%+ of people that were trafficked, they actually said that they were abused as a sexually abused as a child. So it's one of the biggest indicators that this could possibly happen to somebody. So I can go anywhere you want. Where should we go next?
Well, yeah. No, I was going to say, do you mind me asking how old your children were when they were being groomed?
Oh, yeah, they were 13 and 13. Yeah, 12.
Okay.
They were, yeah, 12 so, yeah, somewhere between 12 and 12 to 14, yeah.
Okay. So they were, I mean, that's almost worse. No, when you're older. So I have my co-host on here, Dr. Nancy. Did you have something to say, Nancy?
Yeah. I mean, just listening to you, Billy, I'm like, oh, my God, my 14-year-old son has his phone downstairs right now. I'm about to go down there and snatch it out of his hands. I mean, this is scary. I'm like, my chest is tight. But this is really true, what you're saying. This is so true. You know, and these people are so manipulative. And like you said, the grooming, you know, first, this is somebody who you trusted with your family. This was a friend. I mean, I wish you could just tell us a little bit more about the relationship between you and this person. I know you're going a little bit ahead, but I want to come back a little bit to that because this is somebody you trusted.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I had known him for, I think, almost a decade at this point in time. And we had done all sorts of things together. We'd done events together and things like that. And he was actually my boss on this project. So I'm actually working for him, and I'm working at home, and I'm managing a team that's all over the world. And he obviously isn't at my house or anything, so he's calling me all the time. And so basically he had unfettered access to my children because he had basically been like a family member forever while those kids were growing up. And, of course, why would I care if he was talking to them before they handed me the phone? It didn't matter to me at all. And so, you know, I know this isn't quite I guess it sort of fits in right now, but we've always told our kids that there's no such thing there's only good secrets. So we believe that there's, like, you know, if you're going to give something to somebody for Christmas or their birthday, that's a good secret. Anything else, anything that makes you feel bad should not be a secret. So we were very fortunate that – oh, and we also told the kids that they'd never get in trouble for telling us the truth. So and that's led to some interesting things, like they break things and they go and tell us, and their friends are like going, "You broke that. I can't believe you're going to go tell your parents." They're like, my parents don't care. They want to know that I'm not hurt. And so we'd spent years building up that relationship with them. So I guess the point is that when this happened, when he started telling them about this, they came to us and asked that question. They said, "Why is he telling us those things?" And too often, the relationship between parent and kid is not that healthy, or it's not that close. And so this stuff kind of goes, it goes unseen and unknown. And when these secrets like this happen, where people are like, "Oh, this will just be our little secret," well, then it gets used as a manipulative tool, because they'll threaten you and say, "Well, I'm going to tell your parents that you did blah blah blah," and it turns into this horrible, horrible thing. Now, you were mentioning, you know, kids that have their own phones, kids that have unfettered access to the internet. There is an enormous amount of education that people have to understand how to stay safe online. I mean, from turning off geolocation on your photographs that you take to turning your turning all of your privacy settings on your online social media profiles to, you know, private and only with your friends, trying to get people to understand that they have to actually know somebody before they friend them. You have to understand how video games work. There's a game called Fortnite, and I love that game. But when you play that game, it is immediately multiplayer, and you're put into what they call a lobby with three other people that you don't even know who they are, and they can talk to you. So you talk while you play the game, and that's the nice, that's the ideal part. But what happens is that there are people out there that are trying to abuse your children, and they have all the time in the world. And if they are somebody that's going to be working to traffic your kids, I should just kind of say that these traffickers sell children for up to $1,000 an abuse session, sometimes up to 30 times a day, 7 days a week, and they can make hundreds of thousands of dollars off these children. So they have patience, and they will take a long time. This isn't like your kid gets on one game and this one guy hears your kid's name and all of a sudden your kid's been snatched up. What happens is these guys have this is their career. This is what they do. So they have like 3x5 cards that notate the person's name, what game they play, what time they play, whenever that person mentions their school or anything else like that. Hey, are your parents at home right now? They find out everything they can, and they will use that stuff to come and convince your kids to leave the house so they can get them or manipulate them. They will use any type of technique. It is the sickest stuff I've ever imagined happening until I learned more sick things, and it's just this is like a bottomless pit of evil, and I never thought I would be digging this deep into it. But like on the cursory thing, I'll try to get it back to a what you can do thing. So the best you can do is teach your kids that there is a danger there, and try to be open to listening to them and having discussions about this stuff, because you're never going to take a cell phone away from a kid. You can't keep them off the internet. You can't check all of their apps on there, although some people will suggest that you do, because there are fake apps that look like a calculator, for example, and yet it's a way to get online or has another social media thing. There's so much risk everywhere that it scares the crap out of me. I would suggest that people don't give their kids a smartphone until they're like 17 or 18, and then give them a flip phone the rest of the time so you can just get a hold of them. But, you know, you can't take one away once you've gotten given it to a kid. But, yeah, you need to build a relationship with your children so that they're honest with you and that you're honest with them. It's the hardest thing to do of all, but that's what people need to be doing as parents.
Yeah. That is the key. Not that. Yeah.
It really is. I mean, you can't be there with them. You can't make them make all these good decisions all the time. But that's what you have to get them to make the good decisions. You can't do it out of threats or anything like that. You have to help them do it.
Right.
Anyway. Yeah. So that's the tiny tips on the cell phone thing.
Yeah. So can I ask you a question? I had a question for that. Sorry. When was it, like, how far in was it when the kids felt comfortable coming to you to tell you what was going on? How far did he get?
Oh, for us, it was relatively quickly. So he had been promising them to take them to, like, the indoor skydiving, you know, things like that. So, like, some really, you know, high-dollar entertainment things. But our son, you know, the day that he had come and said, hey, you should be looking at this exact porn site because here are the benefits of this exact porn site, our son came right to us and said, why is he telling us this exact thing? And so my wife and I actually went to his house and asked him, you know, what is up? Why are you doing that? He's like, well, I mean, you know, he's a boy. He should know those things. And I was like going, are you?
Yeah, right.
It was really difficult to control ourselves. And then when our daughter came, actually at that point, to be honest, I got to remember the details. We actually blocked him from calling the house and anything. We said, look, don't ever do anything like that again. You can't talk to the kids. That's it. I thought it was going to be a one-off thing. Maybe he got his act together. And then like a week later, somehow he got through and our daughter picked up the phone. And that's when he started telling her how to use these towelettes to clean the folds of her vagina. And we're like, nope, this has to end, and that's when we went to the police. Oh, and then, like I said, he was my boss, so he didn't pay me. And I lost my job.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah. And, yeah, and it got even better and better because I was really upset about it, and I didn't want to tell everybody. So it turned out to be this huge, horrible war where he was, you know, online saying just super nasty stuff about me and my wife and family just to kind of put up a smoke screen. So if I was the one that would say nasty things about him, it would make me look like an idiot. So I just didn't even engage.
Wow. I'm sorry you had to go through that. What are you going to say, Ms. Kim?
Yeah, I appreciate you saying that. I really do. You know,
yeah,
but
I'm sorry
I would say that.
That
I appreciate that. And what my friends that tell me, they're like, why are you messing with this topic? It's radioactive, you know? And I'm like, well, yeah, well, that's the point, is that I need to do this because people feel that this is
right.
a radioactive topic. You know, there's nothing wrong with talking about trying to protect children. There's nothing wrong with trying to protect adults. There's nothing wrong with trying to help our supply chain have less labor trafficking inside of it. There's nothing wrong with telling people that their shoes were made by child slaves, or that your cell phone's battery, you know, the cobalt that was in there was picked out of the ground by children. Or, I mean, I could go on and on and on. My kids, I mean, my friends are about sick to death of hearing from me. My partner's friends are sick of listening to him because it's like, you know, everything we have to some degree, you know, could be attached to trafficking. And, you know, the
right.
world just is not really interested in hearing about it. And that's been my
people
my,
don't want to know. People don't want to know.
My six-year journey, I can sum it up really quickly. Oh, happy kids in here. I can sum it up real quickly. No one cares about human trafficking. On the whole, people don't want to hear about it. They're not interested in
no.
it. They don't want to realize that their products were made with it and that capitalism is built upon the race to the bottom. And unfortunately, in other countries, that race to the bottom is how those people keep their GDP up. And it's like, it's a huge mess. And so I want people to realize, A, that this is a real thing. And that's basically where about everybody is. It's like, is this even real? Can I get somebody to actually pay attention? And then beyond that, it would be like, how can we avoid this? How can we end this? How can we, you know, how can we do something humane to make a big difference?
Yeah, I don't know. If you, I'm sorry, I should have asked you this earlier. We're already 6 minutes
sure.
into this. Do you prefer to go by Billy Joe?
Oh, yeah,
Billy
Joe's Billy great.
Joe or
yeah. Uh-huh.
Okay.
Billy Joe's,
okay.
Billy Joe's my favorite. It's what I grew up with, so I like it, yeah. And I'm Texan.
Oh,
people can remember that.
There you go, yeah. There you go.
Yes, ma'am.
No, I was going to say, one thing is that I worry too, because the other high statistic in this arena is a child that comes from divorced parents, and I have a bonus grandson who is 10 years old. He'll be 11 in a month, and his mom decided without asking his dad, my daughter's husband, if he could have a cell phone. She just got it for him and gave it to him, and so
right.
that has been a source of contention for a while, for about a month or so now, because she decided that she needed to do that. And
right.
And yeah, that scares me. Because he is probably, out of all my, I've got five grandkids, the one that is most self-assured. He will tell you something to your face, whether he knows it or not, but he tells it to you like, you know, he knows what you're talking about. And so I worry
sure.
about him because, I mean, I think that especially him, my granddaughter who's 10 as well, they're both in the same grade. You know, she's not like that, but she has other issues. She does other things. It's just this whole generation is driving me, you know, blowing my mind these days. I'm like, oh my gosh, what are these kids doing?
Well, that's the thing. We will probably never know what they're doing, honestly.
Right.
Oh,
so I don't know if that sounds so bad, but I mean, it's the truth. So
it's
I don't know. So you're getting towards a question, I'm sure, in there.
Yeah. No, I mean, I guess I'm just wondering how do you from the outside? Because I have been teaching and, talking to my grandkids for about 5 or 6 years now about body safety.
Mm-hmm.
And I even have body safety books on my shelf. But, you know, as a grandparent, you can only do so much. And there's, like, times that it's really – I struggle because maybe the parent doesn't recognize that that – for instance, my daughter will let my granddaughter go to the restroom by herself at a restaurant, and it drives me up the wall. And my granddaughter knows that if I'm with them – that I am going to go with her. She just knows it. But I know that when I'm not with her, she does it anyway. So it's like, how do you as an outsider, I mean, I guess you just have to pay attention, like you're talking about, and understand. I mean, that's why I've tried to build this relationship with them as well. And now I'm staying with my grandson. He'll be here tonight, but he's here every other week. But I'm staying with my daughter right now and that grandson. So I'm trying to build these relationships with him that, you know, make him feel safe and comfortable. But and I'm sure that you get into this a little bit more, too, just about your training and your teaching how to do this. So I'm interested in basically hearing more. I guess I don't have a question, but I'm excited to hear more.
Well, I don't profess to know all the answers, but here's what I can tell you, that your best bet is education. Especially not of the kids necessarily, but of mom and dad. And so, you know, one question to ask them would be, would you let your kid be at the mall completely unsupervised by themselves and let them talk to anyone that walks by them? And I think the answer would probably be no. But the thing is that when somebody has a cell phone, it's like having a predator in your pocket. I mean, like, you know, I'll give you just a couple of examples. Well, first of all, you can't block anybody from getting anywhere on the internet. So if you have a web browser on your phone, which every phone does, you cannot stop that person from going online. You can't stop them from finding porn. You can't stop porn from finding them. And those things can be attached to human beings that will try to manipulate you. A few days ago, I mean, like if your kid has a phone number, a few days ago, my wife got a text, and it was a sexting thing, and it was basically a phishing operation to try to get her to go to a live cam site, which is where there are live people that perform sex, you know, online. And it was a very sophisticated program, and so they asked her a question, and she would write back, and then they would talk to you. It was a bot. It was all artificial intelligence, which wasn't particularly complicated, but that's the kind of thing that's out there. And then so my wife was like, oh, my God, I can't believe this happened. Well, 2 days after that, I got one, a completely different one. And so if you have a cell phone, this stuff can happen to you instantly. And it's happening more and more and more because it's super easy for these bots and machines to dial and dial and dial and text and text and text. And they're not getting in trouble for doing any of this stuff. So, you know, I would just say that basically a child having a cell phone is an unattended minor, period. And if these words make any sense to them, it is really like letting every predator in the world in your kid's pocket. So there are some things you can do. You know, number one could be, like I said, make it not be a smartphone. Get it to be a flip phone, because the whole point of having a phone is so you can be in touch with somebody. And social media is incredibly damaging to kids. Social media and the way that it manipulates our feelings and our emotions and our dopamine and everything else, it makes kids suicidal. What happens is they start deciding they need to keep up with the Joneses, and they think that everybody else's life is happy and their life sucks, so they just feel bad going online, not to mention all of the people that can bully them. So if they don't have social media accounts and they can't get to them 24 hours a day, guess what? They can't be bullied. So you're really doing your kids a disservice by providing them access to the internet and cell phones, unfettered access to the internet, you know, at too early of an age. And one of the things that I'm sure you guys already understand is that once a kid has too much freedom, taking that freedom away from that kid is incredibly difficult. Difficult. So the sooner you can get that smartphone out of that kid's hand, the better chance you have. But, you know, how are you going to convince the parents or any parent that, you know, having access to the internet is bad? I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't
love
that
the internet. I love all this stuff. I love access. I love information. I never thought I would be this person saying these things, but unfortunately the reality is that it's just too risky.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. I'll take this.
Oh,
I'm sorry, ma'am. Go ahead.
Yeah, John was on the line. I think did you have a question, John? You wanted to ask?
Yeah, I did actually. Yeah, how you doing? Thank
I'm
you
doing
Bill,
right.
for being here tonight. Awesome.
You bet.
Thank you for being here, number one. Man, this is like so educational, this show. I'm telling you that there's so many things here that are so true in life that we do have to address this, and we have to do it a lot more, okay? Not only that, you know, one thing I wanted to, address that you were talking about earlier, and we're still talking about it, is when the kids do get the cell phones and the predators are trying to get in on them, is that, you know, these kids can also be a part of groups, which they usually are, right? So then they
right.
start friending the friends of friends, you know. So you see, they're working in a network type form, so they're getting more information and access to more and more children by the minute, you know.
Yep.
You know, you never know how extensive they really are. I mean, even the common person can friend a friend of a friend, but they know who it is. And once they could be, you know, posing as anyone. So it's very important, you know, just like you said, I mean, look, the parents are the key. They have to remain involved. You know, you're not going to be there 24 hours a day, you know, and every minute. But listen, you know, you're going to have to make an effort to, as much as possible, to, you know, make sure that the communication is there, okay? So, in other words, as parents, it's good to, you know, start talking about this with your children and letting them know. You know, that's that taboo that we talk about here on the show, you know, that hasn't been discussed over the years, you know, and you couldn't talk about it before. However, these days are much different, you know. There's too much out here, you know, education-wise. There's too much, too many laws now that are being changed to the benefit of the victims and survivors now versus the predators. So, you know, we have to educate all levels of children, especially when I would talk, what y'all were talking about, the ages, you know, between, I would say, as early as really four. However, when they get to be 10, 11 years old, you know, that is really time to make sure that you're involved every single day as much as possible, you know.
I'd like to tag on one thing real fast with what you just said, and that is that one of the things you can do for your children to help them at a very early age is to teach them the names for their body parts. So they realize that is an actual thing that has a name, and it's separate from who you are. You know, it's yours, but it's but that way they can also describe to you where they were touched. You know what I'm saying, or anything else
Absolutely.
Like that.
Absolutely.
So that was a tip that I got from a psychologist years ago. So teach your children as they can talk those names.
Yeah.
So go ahead. I'm sorry.
That's why we have you here tonight, because we need this. We need to educate the public on all of this good stuff, you know. And I do want to say before, you know, I'll be listening in the background and I'll come back on the show in a little while. But I do want to say that on the NASCA website, okay, we do have an area there that says protecting our kids, okay. And in that, you can scroll down and it will provide you some information also, you know, besides what we talk about on the shows, in having the people that come on the shows that can provide you with the information. But there is information on things like grooming, with different, you know, types of books and editor notes and all kinds of things. So
right.
it is a platform, and it's another platform of you being here. You see, this never ends. So I want to make sure, too, that, you know, that I'll repost the show tomorrow to make sure that it's all over the world. Besides that, I want to make sure, too, that as more and more people come on the show, that I try to get people involved with each other that do this. Because when you have a team working together on trafficking, you know, it's much better, you know, when you do, because individually it's hard because it's so much, you know. In other words, you
so
get
much.
People all from East Coast to West Coast, from North to South, right? Well,
yep.
You know, if you can get people to work together all there and in between, you know, and that's what I think I do here at NAFCA. And I will, you know, definitely try to, you know, have people know about you, Billy Joe, and make sure that you know about them. And hopefully, you know, you all can connect down the road to keep benefiting, you know, this, I mean, deadly world of
right.
sex trafficking. You know, I mean, it is. It's expensive. And I did want to say one thing before I go, is that if you ever looked at a statistic graph on human trafficking, it is the craziest thing that you'll ever read in your life. Because let me tell you what they do, and I'll be done with this just to give you all a little bit of information, is that they actually have what they call a false negative and a dark figure, okay? Then there's a false positive, right? And then there's also a registered number of human trafficking that goes into that, okay, that gives you the actual formula for the statistics on actual human trafficking. It's the craziest thing that you'll ever read, but it's true. You know, that's the part about it. So if you understand what all that means, and I don't want to read it all, it actually is really beneficial to know that when you do get into this, is that it does have a lot of areas that are some unknowns and some ratios that are involved, and I could see
right.
it, you know, so it's very deep. But, you know, it doesn't take,
wow.
let me tell you something, it takes an expensive human being to be involved in this, and there's no question, Billy Joe, that you're that, yeah.
Right.
Well, thank you. I'm actually on your site on that resources page, and wow.
Yes.
Anybody
yes.
that was hearing me talk a little bit about the online stuff, you can go as deep as you want on y'all's page.
Yeah.
So there is a
yep.
ton of information,
yeah,
and I think that's the thing that's really difficult about this, because when you're a parent, I mean, I'm technically minded. Okay, I've been messing around with computers since there was basically anything in my life that had anything to do with them. Video games started in 1972, basically, and I've been a nerd since 1972, I guess. So I'm, like, really, really plugged into this stuff. If you don't know anything about technology, this is overwhelming. It would take me hours just to explain to you how to turn geolocation off on pictures, you know. So
mm-hmm.
this is an overwhelming topic for a lot of adults. It really is. And that's just the online
mm-hmm.
stuff. So I'm not gonna lie about that. Go ahead.
No, I was going to check. Do we have anybody on the panel? If they have any questions.
No, I don't think so right now. That's John. We have a listener that's listening in, so I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they might
okay.
not say anything. But,
well,
yeah.
you know, I'll take this moment to kind of get on a little bit of a soapbox here. So I have a lot of friends that are not interested in this topic. They're tired of me talking about it, and they have looked at some of the statistics and the documentation that I've posted online. And their big question is always like, look, Bill, you say this is such a big deal. You say there's millions and millions of people that are being trafficked across the world, but the prosecution rates do not stand up to that. I mean, there's less than a few thousand people that are even prosecuted for human trafficking across the world every year. I mean, and that right there is part of the problem. It is so difficult to prosecute someone that it is disheartening. When somebody is being trafficked, their trafficker, you have to basically stand up in court and point at that person and say that they were trafficking. And then that person, whatever they had on top of you, that can come right back. And this could be anything from a child. It could be an adult. It could be somebody that's being labor trafficked. You know, it's unbelievable the stuff that's used to hurt people. And the difficulty of prosecuting people is just – it's impossibly frustrating, and there's lots of reasons for all that, and I won't go into them at all because that requires one of my advisors really to do that, because he can go on for days about it. But when you look at the numbers of people that are being prosecuted, it's embarrassing. And then if you look at the numbers that are being used to describe the actual size of the problem, you get anywhere from 20 million to 40 million people around the world. And there's no reason to believe that that's not true. There's ample examples of everything, like I was saying, from cobalt mining to even in Alabama, they just found that company was it? I can't remember the name of the company, but they actually found that there were people being trafficked in Alabama in the supply chain for a large multinational. In our prison system, we actually are trafficking people nonstop. It's absolutely insane that people are getting paid almost nothing inside of the American prison system. And that's straight up trafficking as well. And this is, I mean, it's everywhere you look and no one is getting prosecuted. One of my advisors did an enormous study on the H-2A and H-2B visa system, and it's on our blog on the Knowledge Vault on pbjlearning.com, and you can read his entire study. It's impeccably it has an impeccable bibliography. And so we're looking at the entire way that we bring over people from other countries, and we are allowing them to be trafficked by individuals and corporations inside the United States. And according to Adam, every year the laws become more in favor of the corporations. So it's like this is a huge problem. It's a huge problem everywhere. I know we're all worried about our kids, you know, getting stolen out of a Target parking lot, but I'm like, how do you think your cell phone got made? I mean, Samsung and Apple phones, lots of them are made by a company called Foxconn, where they actually have slaves that are locked inside buildings, and they have to work under horrible conditions to the point where they not only have they locked windows on the outside of the place and put up giant iron gates, but if somebody manages to get past that, they have what they call suicide nets. So if those people try to jump off the building, they actually get caught by a net, and then they get brought back in to continue being enslaved. And that's what's happening in our cell phones. Like I said, I can ruin everything. Oh, I can ruin everything. Yeah, you want to know? I mean, cotton, for example, is actually sold on a market. And so like in different provinces of China, people are actually picking cotton, and that cotton actually gets sold to a person that mixes it all up. So you don't know where that cotton came from in the first place. So the clothing that you're wearing right now, if it came from a lot of cotton manufacturers across the world, it could have been picked by slaves. I mean, it's unbelievable to believe this stuff is happening, and it is everywhere. Yeah, name a product, and I'll ruin your entire experience with it. It's horrible. If it has a battery in it, that battery is very likely to have been touched by slavery. You know, Starbucks and McDonald's uniforms, those things are made inside of American prisons. California, when they have wildfires, they use prison labor. The state of, I think it's Arizona. Yeah, state of Arizona. They actually said the other day, I have a whole article on this on our blog site, but it talks about how if they got rid of all of the unpaid and low paid labor inside of the prison system in Arizona, it would severely affect the entire state because they use all that cheap prison labor. They don't want to kick people. They even had in California, I can't remember the exact year, but they posted that they didn't want to let all of the nonviolent felons out because they were the best workers. So it's our entire system is broken and nobody wants to talk about it. And that has nothing to do necessarily with our children. So, yeah, how's that for some fun?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You could get into the problem that we have with children. But
I'm fully upset about this. I've been working in this field for 6 years, and the solution is going slower than the problem is growing. I mean, human trafficking is the second largest crime in the world. And it's growing faster than anything. I mean, like I'm sure you guys know this, but I'll say it for the listeners' benefit. You know, when you're transporting, a drug across wherever you're transporting it to, then you have to possess that drug and then sell that drug, and then you have to get more of that drug, right? There's a whole process that's involved with that. Well, once you have a human being, you don't sell that and have that go away. You basically can sell it over and over and over and over again until you wear it out or you wear that person out. And in some countries, their slaves, like for instance, in Thailand and a few other countries, they actually have boats that that actually park in international waters, and they are processing seafood. And a lot of that seafood goes to the United States. It's processed by slaves that are brought out to those boats. And when those when the slaves have actually they've outlived their usefulness, they harvest their organs and throw the bodies off the side of the ship. And so the organ harvesting is also another multi-billion-dollar industry that's being perpetuated across the world in one way, shape, or form. Even to the point where there are actually baby factories that are being that are happening across the world. So people are actually being forced to give birth, and those babies are being used for organ harvesting and other worse, more insidious things. And I have some more, I have posts about that on our Knowledge Vault as well.
Yeah, absolutely true. I do read a lot about this. Yeah, absolutely. And I do want to say that, you know, the United States is actually leading the world by double over the UK would be next, and then down, you know, as far as the number of coming from, you know, a certain place. And, you know, Texas actually, Billy Joe, is rated number one. Last I did read as far as the amount of kids that come through that state. Yeah. So I just wanted to throw that in there.
Oh, it's a huge mess. I mean, we have, you know, our foster care system has enormous issues in it. We're overwhelmed. It's underfunded. We just got back from doing a conference in Dallas called Shine the Light. It's Light the Way. I apologize. And it's done by the Texas Family and Protective Services Group. And so it's an invite-only conference that happens once a year. It's absolutely fantastic. We got chosen to go there and exhibit our VR product. And I got to listen to so many people that work in CPS, that work in the foster care system and work in all these things. And the stories that they were telling me, I mean, our system is broken. I mean, and I love the people that are working in it and doing the best that they can, but they are underfunded and underappreciated. And with all the changes that they've been making to the laws recently, we are just going to fill up our system even further, and there's no funding for it. So, I mean,
I was going to say that being in Texas, and I'll leave it at this, is that I know even Ken knows, too, is that there's HOPIX Global down there, okay? You can go in, you know, HOPIX Global is who it is. That's where you're going to find, like, this Texas show is on there. They actually do a lot when it comes to this. You know, they actually have promotions going with a lot of authors that are putting books out. You know, Kim's there. So, you know, she can tell you more, you know, about this, but I am affiliated with them also. So I'm hoping this is what I mean earlier by connecting, you know, getting people to contact with other organizations and other people. So yeah, at some point, you know, we're going to have to work together, even though we're kind of independent in our own ways. It's crucial that the communication is there, because without, you know, that, nobody's going to get anywhere, you know. And it's time for action. You know, anybody can talk about things all day, but what are you going to do? You know, how are you going to go about it? How are you going to, you know, education at the school level, like you're saying, you know, with phones and educating the parents back at the house. These are all very, very important, you know, levels to educate everyone on. And it's not, you know, just for, you know, the people that are vulnerable. It's for anyone, okay? Because even the people that are just beautiful families that have money and everything going for them, and the kids are excellent students, it can happen in a heartbeat, you know? So it's important that we keep doing this. So thank you for that.
You know what? Yeah, I appreciate that. And so there's a couple of things I'd like to tag on to that. So the first one would be that it doesn't matter what level of income your family has. It doesn't matter how much time you spend with your kids. If the wrong people have decided that your kid needs to be targeted, is going to happen. So you have to be aware that this can happen to anybody. And I'll give a couple of examples. So example one would be around Austin. There's a really let's say more financially stable area of town, and they found out that there was a group of 38 children that were being trafficked by one person, and they were doing and they were being bribed essentially with nicotine vape cartridges. And it turned into a self-perpetuating thing where they had one kid that did it, and that kid tricked other kids into doing it, and other kids into doing it, and it grew like a cancer. And a lot of the ways they do this, I mean, are psychological manipulation. And some of those ways is, let's say they have one person that sends a picture of their body. Well, those people will use that to threaten them and say, hey, I'll show everybody if you don't do this one thing for me. And so eventually they start doing worse and worse and worse things. And so they're stuck, and there's nothing else, nothing else they can do except, you know, whatever that person tells them to do. And so I would also say that this is such a secretive thing that's happening, and they can't tell their parents. They can't tell anybody else. So I live in Austin, Texas. So Austin has a school district. It's AISD, Austin Independent School District. So we do a lot of events with the school district, and we go to mental health fairs and things like that, and we demonstrate our VR product. And I've had the opportunity to speak to some of the law enforcement officers that are there to provide security and help and things like that. And they have been telling me that there is an epidemic of children that are committing suicide to get out of their trafficking situations. And it seems completely unbelievable that's true. There's nothing in the news about this. I can't find anything. And so I asked them, like, why is it that this isn't reported? And they said their parents do not want to sully the reputation of their children. So what's happening is these kids are being trafficked, sometimes by other kids, in fact, a lot of times by other kids. And then the children don't know what to do, how to get out of this thing. They are completely manipulated by other people, and they want a way out, and they just kill themselves. And this is not just AISD. It's happening everywhere. And the other story I was going to tell you is that, so we license our software, our virtual reality software, to other nonprofits and groups that want to go out and do education. And one of the groups that we just licensed it to, they actually do in-school training. So they've done, like, I think they've educated over 10,000 kids that are in, like, you know, big arenas and, you know, auditoriums and things. And they went did a presentation inside of a high school at a in a village that had 500 citizens of the village. And they went through the presentation. They got finished, and the principal of the school came over and said, "How did you came here? Because last week they busted a human trafficking ring in this village. There were 10 children out of a 500-person village that were being trafficked." And so this is happening everywhere. I cannot emphasize it enough. No one is being arrested. No one is being prosecuted. And these children, not to mention all the adults, these children are just being completely abused, psychologically injured for the rest of their lives. And, I mean, it breaks people. I mean, not everybody obviously is broken, you know, from this, but it is seriously damaging. I mean, like, we're talking about all these adverse childhood events, that the more of them that you have, the more physical, ailments, injuries that you can have, all the way up until cancer. I've just been learning this from another psychologist, and so I'm really learning more about how trafficking and adverse childhood events can actually mess you up physically for the rest of your life, not just because you've been raped consistently, but just because you're having psychological trauma that actually physically affects you. So I was never expecting to hear that a 500-person village would have 10 children being trafficked in it, and that seems scary. And okay, so one last one. We installed our VR software in a middle school in California in a town called Vista, and so it's a 750-kid middle school, and they brought – when I went to install the software and teach them how to use it, they brought in 20 random kids from the school. So 750 kids, 20 kids randomly from the school. They went and they used our VR thing, and when they finished, 8 kids wanted to stay. There were 8 little girls, 12 to 14 years old, and then we sat for an hour after they went through it, and they started telling us things that I would have never thought I would hear. I mean, it's about – you know, what it's like to be a young girl as you're turning into a woman. You know, what clothing you wear determines how people treat you. The boys treat you, the women treat you, and they went on and on and on. And so as they were telling us all that stuff, and there were some teachers that were there as well, they started telling us about the previous year at the school. And it's like, okay, well, what was going on? And they were like, oh, yeah, this one girl, she was being trafficked by her stepfather. The teachers were like, I'm sorry, what? And they're like, oh, yeah, this was happening, blah, blah, blah. And the teachers were like going, is that why she brought in all that money and bought us all these supplies and brought in candy and things like that? And I'm like going, I don't really know what the deal is, but it sounds like that's something that should have at least been looked into, you know? So anyway, that happened. All the kids knew about it, and none of the adults did. And then they said, hey, well, you know, this another girl that was here last year, you remember when she went and had her operation in Mexico? And they were like, oh, yeah, absolutely. She was gone for a while, and she got back, and everything was cool. They were like, no, it turned out that what was happening was her parents took her to Mexico and sold her kidneys. So this is happening everywhere, and no one is being prosecuted. This is an epidemic, an invisible epidemic, if you will, whatever words that we want to use. And the only answer is to talk to your children more, to talk to your friends, to look for these red flags, you know. Which, you know, I'm sure you guys have a list. If you don't have a list, I can send you once you put it on your site. But yeah, it's a mess, and we have to do something. Like talk about it, or create an experience, okay. and get out there. I wanted to do something to make a difference, so that this would be something I could leave behind after I'm gone. And this was my answer was education.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's what the answer is. And this isn't about me in any way. I was wondering if you heard though about Darkness to Light. If you've heard about them.
What are they called?
Darkness. So I facilitate and train.
Yes.
Yeah.
Darkness to Light.
And it is it's a program. Yeah, it's a program for adults. And so I go at it. I train adults. Everything basically that you are saying as well is, and it's based off of what we call the five steps, which is learn the facts, minimize the opportunities, talk about it, recognize the signs, and react responsibly. And when I found this curriculum, it's been about 5 years, I think, that I've been going out and doing this curriculum into my community. It makes me feel good that I know that there are pockets of people all over that know exactly what they're supposed to be doing. Because you're right, if we're not trained in it, it's the same thing as not talking to our kids. If we're not trained in it as adults, how are we going to know to teach our kids? And, you know, that's something else that we talk about, too. You've got to be able to teach them that there are dangers out there, just like you teach them how to cross the street. You know, I use that analogy sometimes, too. You teach them from time to little tiny, and that is a scary thing, if they get hit by a car, and they realize that. And so if you're talking about body safety from a very young age, like you were saying, then they will recognize that there are certain signs or things that make them not feel well, you know, and feel funny in their tummy or whatever you've got to say to them. But and we talk a lot about, you know, using the right words for your body as well. It shouldn't be, you know, your penis shouldn't be any different than your ear. I mean, it's part of your body that belongs to you, and nobody should touch it. So
that's right.
I love what you're saying as well. So. But I'd love to hear a little more about your curriculums that you're doing.
Okay, thank you. So what I had done first was I spent a year traveling across the United States, meeting as many specialists and groups and police as I could get my hands on. I mean, I've been everywhere from, you know, Miami to Portland, Oregon to, you know, San Diego to New York and all points in between. I've had the opportunity to do a whole lot of stuff, like even go on a actually be there when the police were actually posting a fake ad on Backpage so they could see what it would be like to actually to get some people to phone in and text, because they were working with a group that was working on demand and they were going to intercept those people. So I got to see all of that. And so what I did during that entire year was basically try to figure out what is this problem? How are we going to approach this thing? So it took me about a year to actually write scripts that I wanted to have for our virtual reality product. And so the idea was I wanted to create this educational tool that when you put the headset on, you would find a reasonable, seemingly innocuous situation that could actually lead to somebody becoming trafficked. And I knew that by creating that emotional connection to that young girl, it would make people more interested in learning the actual educational materials. Because usually what happens is the general thing is that would never happen to me, it would never happen to my kids, it never happened to anybody I know. So I'm trying to head that off at the pass literally by trying to get people to understand how this can happen by somebody being tricked. Not any fault of their own, but by that happening that way. And so so we created the VR program. We created an in-person education curriculum that somebody could use inside of a school. So they would lock our VR software. They would also come with the free educational stuff. And then we started getting our stuff installed in a bunch of schools. We did a huge event in Los Angeles with Tony Robbins at his 60th birthday with Operation Underground Railroad, where they raised like $18 million to end trafficking. So we were really on this serious uptick, and then COVID happened. So we were supposed to be doing like 15 fundraisers in South by Southwest in Austin, and that all went down. So I kind of we had to put all of our VR stuff inside of the closet. So we just like, okay, put it in boxes, and we waited. And while I was waiting on that, while I was waiting for COVID to kind of get over with and people being interested in putting on a VR headset again, I met up with my partner Dave Deeds, or Dr. David Deeds. He's since gotten his PhD. And we created an online course called Human Trafficking Essentials. And that online course teaches you all of the basics that somebody needs to know about human trafficking. It starts off with trafficking, the legal definition of trafficking, so that people can actually understand that trafficking has components. Component one is the act of giving somebody or actually possessing somebody or putting them in a place or basically being in charge of someone. The second aspect is the means, and that means can be force, fraud, or coercion unless you're under 18, and that doesn't count. And then the third is what they call the purpose, and that purpose is for basically exploiting somebody commercially, whether it is for their organs or for labor or for sex. So we shorten that to what they call the AMP model, so it's action, means, and purpose. And if we can pound that into people's heads and get them to understand that, because most people say, oh, it's force, fraud, and coercion. It's like, nope, it's not required for a child to be trafficked. All that's required for a kid is that there is a body provided and there's a commercial exchange. And it could be anything of value. It doesn't have to be cash. Anyway, so if we can get people to understand that, just the basics, then we can put the onus on the local law enforcement that is supposed to be doing this work. So local law enforcement is supposed to be stopping agricultural labor trafficking. Local law enforcement is supposed to be working with the schools to try to make sure that this is stopping. Local law enforcement is supposed to be working out on the street, and they're supposed to be trying to find out if people are actually being trafficked. And so the first part was and is about teaching law and the definition. Then we want to put people inside of our VR headset so they can actually understand this happens to everybody. Then the second chapter, but of course, with COVID, we couldn't do that. So we went ahead and went to chapter two, which is prevalence, which is trying to get people to understand this can happen anywhere at any time to any person, no matter what color, shape, sex, whatever that they are. And then the third chapter is about risks and vulnerabilities. So we try to get people to understand that this can happen. The weaker someone is, or the more vulnerable they are, or the more unmet needs they have, the more likely it is that this could happen to them. Now, of course, like I mean, I'll say it a million times, human trafficking is a bullseye. Obviously, you have everything from sexual abuse or physical abuse are obviously, happening to so many more people than are being trafficked. So we try to cover all that stuff. But basically those vulnerabilities or unmet needs are the things that put people in a position where they might, for instance, if they don't have a place to stay, they might engage in what they call survival sex or sex for shelter. So these are the kind of things that happen mm-hmm. to people that that have runaway behavior or they've just decided that they want to go somewhere else and don't know where they're going to go. So then the last thing that we educate people about is the responses. So what do you do if you think you've found a victim? What is it you're supposed to do? And then the main thing is don't get anybody in danger. So there's a whole bunch of this stuff. That's all included in our course. But the the idea first was, hey, if we can put this headset on everybody, that's great. And then, of course, the reality is that headsets are expensive, and they're, you know, and you have to get somebody there to do the training in person. So that's when we went to our online stuff, which is which means that we can scale worldwide. And that's the thing that I'm really interested in doing, because I have experience with that. I've made Facebook games before. We've had, you know, millions of users. And so we've got this heavy-duty, hardcore, road-tested technology ready to go, and we want to have people crush our servers. So I wanted to offer you guys and any of the listeners that are here right now a free login to our online course called Human Trafficking Essentials. You can find it at pbjlearning.com. So if you click at the top, it'll say Human Trafficking 101. That makes it super easy. Just click on that, and when you go to checkout, you just you type in NASCA August, and so for the entirety of August, the course will be free for anybody that wants to take it. And I'll make sure to email you guys the stuff so you can put it up on the site as well.
So that's NASCA August, you said?
NASCA August, yeah. So there's four A's all told. Can't get enough A's in there. NAASCAAUGUST.
All right. Yeah, we got it. Absolutely.
Okay, thank you for doing it.
Yeah,
nice
absolutely.
You
know, it's actually rare that somebody actually offers us something like that. You know, it's a treat the way I look at it, because really it is. You know, I have to say, and I do want to say one thing real quick, and I'll let you continue on. Is that there's two shows, Billy, that if you could at some time look back at them, because both of these I think are really something you should listen to. One,
sure.
In particular, if you could write this number down, it's a scan number 2781 with Nick Bryant. Okay, he's the one, you know, that really wrote about the Little Black Book with Epstein, about trafficking.
Oh yeah,
yeah. So that's who that is. He's been on the show. Very interesting show. Okay. Now the other one was with Angela Maskevich. Okay. Angela has Safe Kids Now, and she has an international hotline. I'm trying to find hers. Her scan number was 2714. Okay. Those two shows. So with that being said, NASCA also provides two phone numbers religiously for anyone that might need it in case they are missing a child, or if you know someone that is. One is 1-800, the number 4, and a child. So 1-800-4-A-CHILD, and then 1-800-THE-LOST. Okay? So
yep.
Very easy to remember. And plus we have more. So, you know, so those are just two. And actually, Angela has another one. That's a 833-274-8433 with Safe Kids Now. So I just want to put those out on the air.
I am ready to listen to every one of those. I might,
And there's more, too, Billy. Those are just two that are just right off the top of my head. I have at least 10. No question about it. So,
well, I tell you what. One of the things.
Uh-huh.
I'm sorry. Go right ahead, John.
No, I was just saying that there's several more people that eventually I would love for you to either hear what they have to say or get to know them, just for future references. And that's what I want NASCA to have. I want them to have this platform, and I'm really hard at work trying to do this exact thing, so we can put an end to this as much as possible.
Mm-hmm.
That is fantastic. So I was going to say that I'm scanning through those episodes that you've mentioned, and I noticed that you've had a few people that I know on here, including Niecy Hamilton. So that's fantastic.
Yes.
And she's a hoot.
I know Niecy well.
She's just a hoot, and she loves our VR thing. You should ask her about that, see what she thinks about it if you chat with her anytime soon. But what I was going to tell you is that on so I've created the VR thing through Radical Empathy. I created the online course with my partner Dave through PBJ Learning, and on PBJ Learning we've also created what we call the Knowledge Vault. And so it has over, I think we have almost 1,100 articles on there right now. So we have articles, resources, et cetera. It's heavily, it's categorized and has lots of little hashtags and things so you can find the stuff that you want. And what I have been doing on there is I've actually been doing online reviews of courses. So I'll take a course about trafficking and I'll actually videotape myself, not videotape, but I'll stream it. So you can actually see what I think of particular courses that are out there. And I'm telling you that because I'm also, you know, doing like read-alongs or watch-alongs. So it might be kind of fun to watch one of these or listen to one of these podcasts and have me just stop it and make my comments on it. And then I'll post that up on our site to kind of do some additional content. And that way, you know, not only will be some cool stuff maybe for you, but you'll know for a fact that I've seen them. Ha ha. Anyway. Yeah, so this is,
yeah.
you have a great body of work here. So go ahead.
You might say you could call in if you wanted to, right, John? Is Billy Joe? If you wanted to call in, and then you could probably get, you know, those topics going.
Absolutely. You know, that's another night that we can have an open mic forum and do some different things that way. I mean, it's always available. So, it's really up to everyone just getting together. And of course, I'm the one to make that happen. I'd love to have that, you know.
Well,
more than 11. This is who I am. You know, this is what I
love
to
do. Yeah. This is all I want to be doing too. You know, it's a mission that I have, and I want to get out there and tell people that there's a problem, but there is something that you can do about it. And the first thing you can do about it is actually recognize that it's a problem. And then after that, get educated, you know, and my partner, Dave, and I, we're trying to find just the simplest things to do to try to get people to understand that there's something they can do about trafficking. And just some simple things are like, you know, every month, maybe instead of buying like regular coffee, buy a fair trade, you know, cup of coffee. Allegedly fair trade is supposed to mean that people are actually being paid fairly for their work. Of course, it's never fully checked. I mean, there's nobody that's really checking the stuff constantly, but it is a better choice. You know, buying used electronics is always a great decision. Buying some used clothing every so often is a great decision. So you're not participating in the fast fashion that's being promulgated out there. It's the little things that you can do. You don't have to change your entire life immediately, you know, and walk outside with a sign and stand in the street and tell people there's trafficking. But it's like, if you can just make a little change here and there, there's something that you can do about it.
Absolutely. Well, and I say that all the time, you know, what I do when I go out and teach these classes, it's not going to change the world tomorrow, but I'm doing a little bit to change, you know, some people's opinion how they look
small,
at this. And a lot of times I'll tell the people in the class, I'll tell them that it's good. If you are worked up and you're, you know, mad about this, that's good. Because then you will listen, you will pay attention, and you could do something about it. So,
that's right.
And what we... Now, how about this class? I meant to ask you, how long is the curriculum?
Oh, that's a great question. So the VR experience averages about 15 minutes. It is completely interactive, so you can complete it a little bit faster than that, or you can actually experience it for longer, maybe 20 minutes or 25 minutes, depending on how intricate or how interested you are in the material, because we allow people to make their own decisions about what it is they want to learn, and there's like, for instance, we were talking a little bit about the mobile phone. So when you look at the phone, you might only want to learn one little clue off of it, but you might want to learn all six, for example, so you can listen to it longer. So then the online curriculum, Dave and I, when we started, I was like, hey, we need to make a 30-minute course. That's as much time as anybody is ever going to really want to spend on this. And so Dave and I talked and talked and talked, and we were like, I don't think we can really do it for, you know, any shorter than like an hour and a half. And so we started working on this thing. And the end result is it's about 50 minutes, 50 minutes, and 30 minutes of it is video. So we have like live instructional video with animated stuff on top of it, live video as well. I'm sorry, video embedded in it. And then we also have purely animated video. So anytime it's a survivor talking or a survivor's story happening, we don't have anything that's exploitative or visually scary or triggering, hopefully. It's all done through what they call doodly, which is like little sketches of characters. So we try to be really, really cautious. Our courses are not filled with exploitative, scary stories and trying to freak everybody out and talking, you know, and telling, I don't know, it's horror stories. I mean, a lot of people have their courses that are just filled with that stuff, and we feel like it's more important to present the data that's there and try to get people to the humanity through different ways instead of just trying to scare people. If you want to get scared, you can go look on other websites and you can see as much exploitative stuff as you want. I don't feel like that's very effective, and it certainly doesn't work for children. So, yeah, so VR 15 minutes, the online course about 45 to 50 minutes. And, again, most of that is video, actually. And everything else is interactive. I guess I should say this, but I'm gonna pound this into anybody that will ever listen to me. So all of the studies show that the most powerful education is actually experiential education. So it's like I always use the example of, you know, what are you going to learn about a shovel, you know, by reading about it in a book? You have to learn about a shovel by using a shovel. And so that's why the interactive stuff in the VR is so important and so effective. And we also use that technique inside of our online course. So you learn some stuff and then you get an activity to practice with it. And then you learn some more stuff and you get an activity to practice with that. We're not trying to fail anybody. So when you make a mistake inside the course, it actually shows you where you can go learn that stuff, or if it's something that you're not quite getting, it actually will teach it in a different way. So we approach every aspect of trafficking and all the learning objectives from like three or four different directions. So it might be a fact or definition or law, or we include it in a story or a survivor story or an interactive activity or in a video or just written in a paragraph, so that all these different learning modalities and things that are more important for this person versus that person are actually taken care of. So we're super big on multiple learning modalities and interactivity. There's been a big study by Carnegie Mellon that actually shows that interactive education is 6 times more effective than passive education, like reading a book or watching a video, for example. Yeah. So we try to mix it up all over the place.
Yeah, and they need to start doing that. I mean, not only in these kind of curriculums, but they need to start doing it in schools more as well, because not all kids, because my son couldn't sit there and learn. He had a really hard time, and something interactive would have been so much easier and better for him. But that's my little soapbox on that. But so could you tell us exactly how to get to your curriculum and how to get in touch with you?
Great question. So you can find our curriculum at PBJ Learning, which is short for Peanut Butter and Jelly Learning. That's kind of how Dave and I work together, like peanut butter and jelly. I'm the interactive educational guy, and he is the college professor that's been doing this educational training forever. So we see that as kind of a little tongue-in-cheek thing, and it's also kind of the way that we work together. He does a little bit, and I do a little bit more until finally it's finished. So that's pbjlearning.com for the online course. And then if you're trying to reach us to talk about our virtual reality experience, you can find us at Reef Cares, which is short for Radical Empathy Education Foundation, if that's not long enough. So it's REEFCARES. And let's see, so you can find PBJ Learning's social media stuff, PBJ Learning Inc. On Twitter, and Reef Cares on Twitter. And we have Cash Apps and everything else. If you want to help us out, we're totally social media out. And you can find our knowledge vault is at pbjlearning.com as well. So if you're looking for tons and tons of assets and resources, that's where you'll find them. And everything in the knowledge vault is completely free.
Nice. Well, thank you for doing that. That's amazing.
Oh, yeah.
Did you have anything else to say? Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Bill. Really, Joe. Go ahead.
Oh, no. I was just going to say that, I try to keep the knowledge vault filled regular everyday stories that are popping up in the news. So you can, like I said, you can read about the Arizona prisons, or you can read about, soon you'll be able to read about the, Well, I could go on and on. I mean, I probably write about 3 or 4 blogs a day about that stuff. But yeah, it's it's important. And so we also, all that stuff gets tweeted out and sent to LinkedIn and sent to our Facebook page, right. Constantly.
Well, these shows will be posted on that, by the way. This show will be, first thing tomorrow. That's what I do. I'll make sure that it gets posted everywhere. And so that way anyone can pull the show up at any given time, you know.
There's
a couple other names that I wanted to give you while we were talking, just off the top of my head. One would be Alan Stamps, okay? He owns what they call the River Jordan, okay?
The River Jordan.
He's very exclusive in the fact that what he does, he gives the foster care system another platform for kids that are in the process or have aged out, okay, or left and came back, you know, which happens in a huge way when it comes down to human trafficking. The other thing would be Bobby Joy Hansen or Barbara Joy Hansen. Okay, she's on here, but you could look at some of her work too, and that way you can get familiar with some of these people. And there's a lot more too. And later on down the road, we can connect with some of these people. So they know about you also. You know, that's what's huge about this is that getting everybody together is the key. You know, it's the only way that we're going to get stuff done. Okay.
You know,
so
I would love to tag onto that really quickly. So when I was doing my, you know, my across the United States tour, essentially, what I asked people like a couple of questions. The first question was, what is the average amount of time that people stay employed by your group? What is the turnover? Anybody care to guess? The average that I heard across the board? How long? Year, 2 year, 5 years, 10 years? How long do you think people generally stay in this fight?
I'll give it maybe 6 months to a year.
Okay. Anybody else care to guess? I'll tell you the answer. So what I got out of it was approximately a year and a half, and I was shocked to hear it was that long. Uh-huh. And so if you take the thought that I think 6 months is pretty reasonable nowadays. I don't even know how bad it is. I know a lot of people are leaving because they during COVID they realized that they weren't getting paid anything, they weren't making a dent, and they just basically gave up. So there was a lot of people that left the groups that I'm participating in during COVID, and people were lamenting that. And why did I bring that particular part up? Oh, okay. So I asked, how long do people stay in this thing? And it's about a year and a half was what I had heard. And then I asked the second question, which was, what kind of mental health support do you have? Anybody care to guess? Okay, the answer is zero.
Yeah.
The people that are working in this field are not getting therapy. At least they're not getting it paid for by any of their organizations. Mm-hmm. So you're burning these people out. They're not being paid enough. They're not getting any support in their mental health services or anything like that. And then so all what that really results in, and you guys already have figured this out in your head now, but what happens is that these groups cannot possibly be functioning well because you don't have time to get to know someone to know where the resources are. So all of these groups that really do need to be working together, they need to have these spokes and hubs that are actually connected. And so every time somebody leaves, all those little hubs disappear. And so you have to bring somebody else in, and then you have to build those relationships back up. It is a horrible, hidden away thing that needs to be exposed. It's like people need to be paid well to do this job, and they need to be taken care of psychologically so they can continue to add value to people. And these organizations can't be healthy and can't work together as a community if people aren't staying employed. So, So you're right. And I've worked very hard to stay in touch with people, but, you know, it's a shame when those people that you've been in touch with just disappear. And then I guess I would say this other thing. This is a bit of a bit hopeful, I suppose. There are organizations and coalitions that do exist in different states and different parts of states that are very healthy, and they work very hard together, and they coordinate, and they know what each different group does, so they can actually pass people along to the right organization. But that requires a lot of effort, and it requires a lot of time. The people that are volunteering, they can go to these coalition meetings, and they can do this, because this stuff is generally not paid for by employers. So there are people that are doing really good work in this, and they work very hard to maintain these coalitions. And so if you know them, promote them. Anyway, so
you know,
that's a huge issue that's out there. Sorry, go ahead, John.
Well, thank you so much, Billy Joe, for being on this evening. We appreciate you. Yeah, we're just sitting down here. So, we love it. We love it. And we hope to hear from you again soon. Yeah. Thank you for being here. And, you know, as we always say, there's enough eyes and ears out there for everybody to pay attention to what's going on and to keep our children safe, so we can all make a difference if we work together like you've been talking about. Have a good evening, everyone.
Right.
Thanks for being on.
Good night.
Thank you.
Good night, everybody. Thank you. Be in touch. 'Cause that dawn was you all forgot after all that you've done. Thank you.